Krish Mohan is a comedian who has fun with his own frailties.
Right, I still have anxiety to this day. I have a crippling amount of anxiety. But I recently found out that anxiety is a survival trait. Do you guys know that? Yeah, it's an evolutionary advantage. The reason we're all here is because we're descendants of anxious cowards. Back in the hunter-gatherer days, our ancestors were the people that was like, what's that noise? F*** it, I'm out, and then just ran away.
Krish Mohan headed for a four-city tour through North Carolina. The anti-imperialism nationwide takeover starts tonight in Asheville at the block off Biltmore, and he is now in the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville to speak with us on the state of things. Krish Mohan, welcome to the state of things.
Thank you, Frank. How's it going?
Good to have you here. I should say it's K-R-I-S-H, so I'm pronouncing it right. It's not Chris, it's Krish. And it's great to have you here. You talk about your family actually moved from India, right, to Pittsburgh when you were 8 years old. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I moved. My dad got a transfer from his job, and he moved 6 months before we did. And the first weekend that we came down to the States, which was me, my mom, and my sister, was 4th of July weekend. Which is quite the introduction to
welcome to America,
American culture. Yeah,
big adjustment for you?
A little bit, a very loud adjustment, I would say.
Yeah.
More than anything, a lot of fireworks, a lot of drunken behavior that an 8 year old is not particularly used to.
You wound up doing comedy at the age of 16, am I right?
Yeah, I started in a high school talent show, and I basically auditioned for it, and they've said that we can't really have you be a part of the talent show, but there's a bunch of bands going on. Yeah.
Oh.
But the teacher liked what I was doing, so he basically said that since there's a bunch of bands going on, we don't want any lull in the show, so if you can come up and do 3 5-minute segments in between some of these bands so they can set up and tune their instruments. And he asked me if I had 15 minutes of material, and I didn't, but I said I did. And I pretty much went on stage, and the last 5 minutes was just me doing the Indian accent for 4.5 minutes.
Oh, no. Did you? Just do you say anything? You were 16, so you're off the hook on this, so go ahead and confess. But, like, were you playing into all the stereotypes?
Yeah, and I don't think I completely understood what exactly I was doing with those stereotypes at age 16. It was until later that I was trying to trying to break the stereotypes by pointing out how absurd they are, right? And you can't point out how absurd something is without addressing the actual thing. But it ended up being that by doing the accent and by talking about the stereotypes so much that I think it kind of validated them a little bit more. So I had to figure out how to take it one step further, and that was to address the larger issues within what stereotypes are, within what racism is and how it's addressed in America, and kind of point out the absurdities within that. And that takes a little while to do, because you have to learn how to make the stereotypes themselves funny.
Yeah, well, that is the hard part, right? Because I won't name the shows that I think just play up the stereotype, and, you know, they might say they're trying to raise consciousness, but frankly, they just play into it, and it's ha-ha, ha-ha gay joke, ha-ha, you know, autism joke or whatever. Yeah, but it's a much more difficult thing to actually take you the next step in that Stephen Colbert way in which I play the part and make you see the absurdity in it. That takes a lot of work.
Absolutely. It's also, you know, the audience sometimes in certain venues, certain comedy clubs, that sort of stuff is they're not really used to being challenged in that way, because comedy in those environments are used as a form of escapism. And that's fine if that's what you want. You know, we do get bombarded with a lot of political news, and there's a lot of my friends that are like, can you just go back to making fun of your mom? Is that something we can do? And that's fine, because you do get bombarded so much. But I think comedy is such a powerful vehicle to drive change and to get people to think. And when you can get people to laugh at some of these issues, laugh at the idea of racism and what you've been through, right, you kind of break down the barriers, and it helps you address certain traumas and address certain of your own frailties and failings. And then you can get past them because you're able to laugh at them a little bit more.
Well, you had another moment in which your life took a more serious turn, and then it became reflected in your work. The loss of a friend when you turned 21, you lost a dear friend to suicide. Tell us how that tragedy helped shape you.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing for anybody to lose anybody, you know, and you kind of go in internally. And the first thing that I think me and all of my friends that were very close to my friend Bobby did was, how could we have prevented this? You know, how is this our fault? And once you start looking inward, you really start to dig into yourself and figure out, are you a good person? You know, like you start asking those questions. You start asking, what could I have done differently? How can I be better so that this sort of stuff doesn't happen to anybody again? And looking inward kind of made me realize, you know, my own anxieties, what I was really afraid of, and made me face those things, which really helped in a sense. Like Bobby was, my friend, was very, very supportive of my comedy career, and he would come to pretty much every gig that I did, whether it was at a coffee shop or at the comedy club or some weird bar, you know, in the middle of nowhere or something. Like, he was always supportive of it. And I basically, it solidified the fact that this is something that I should do and use comedy as a vehicle to address people's humanities, address this common shared humanity that we do have, and talk about things that are important to talk about. Like, you know, what leads somebody to commit suicide so that somebody doesn't need to do that again.
I am talking with comedian Krish Mohan today on The State of Things. Krish is going to be in Asheville at the block off Biltmore talking with me from Blue Ridge Public Radio right now. And so you've taken on subjects like gun control and guns and America's fetishization of weapons. I want to play a clip from some of your stand-up on that very subject.
Yeah. I'm even astounded at the fact that guns as an invention has made it this far. Because the first guns we invented were just dog s***. Like, you got one shot, it took 12 and a half minutes to reload, and by that time somebody had stabbed you in the face with a bayonet. That's how the first guns were, is that we put a knife at the end of it just in case.
Comedian Krish Mohan. He's performing tonight in Asheville at the block off Biltmore, Saturday night at Chapel Hill at Zog's. When you, for routines like that, I mean, do you start thinking about gun control seriously and then move into comedy mode, to jokes? I mean, what's the order of operations for you, especially when it's issues like that?
Yeah, it does start with the issue itself. It starts with what does this represent to people? You know, what are people saying about gun control, and what's my stance on guns? And the way that I look at it is from learning a lot about the culture behind guns, right? And like you said, people's obsession with it. And I do think that there is this obsession with guns in this country based on the Second Amendment, and partly a lack of understanding of the Second Amendment. And it's something that I don't fully understand, but I know what people are saying about it. You start with that, and then you kind of can play off of what some of the absurdities are, what some of the hypocrisies within what they believe are, and to me, it's a tool for killing. That's the only purpose for it. That's the only thing that it was invented for, is to take another life, whether it's a human life or an animal life, whatever it is. And if we can start the conversation there, maybe we can work a little bit backwards and say, well, maybe we don't need this. You know, what are we doing as a society that somebody doesn't need to go and purchase a gun or pick up their parent's weapon and go into a school and shoot 17 people, or, you know, go into a workplace and take it out on somebody? You know, what can we do as people to take care of each other so that's not the option somebody has to take? And weaving comedy in through that kind of helps the message reach not just people that are against guns, but that are people that are for guns, so that they understand where we're coming from, so we don't have to keep yelling at each other about a very, very sensitive issue.
You know, it's interesting to think about you coming to this country at the age of 8. I mean, mm-hmm. I wonder at this point, do you approach or do you feel like an outsider looking at this culture and this country of ours from the outside? So you've got that outsider's view of some of the ironies that we may well miss, or do you feel like a, you know, thoroughly born, not born and bred, but through and through American? How do you approach that?
Yeah, I definitely feel like an outsider looking in the sense of, like, there are certain things that are very normalized within American society, like this culture surrounding guns and, you know, being hyper competitive and being very masculine and things like that, that are very normal to a lot of people. And I kind of looked at it coming from a country that has, you know, like the Hindu religion. I was raised Hindu, and a lot of that doesn't believe in one God. It doesn't believe in this omnipotence. It believes in forgiveness and redemption. And once I started moving even away from religion, I kind of still instilled those values of redemption and forgiveness and trying to understand each other and learning constantly. And I kind of looked at this idea of omnipotence that exists in American culture, that we all know what's right. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to constantly do what's right. You know, the bravado that you kind of see. And I had to question that a little bit to see whether that was right or whether I was wrong.
Well, Krish, if they want to know more, they're going to have to see your performance. But I want to thank Krish Mohan. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Frank.
He's on tour in North Carolina. The anti-imperialism nationwide takeover gets underway in Asheville tonight. Block off Biltmore. More sites at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Ned Firm, recognized around the world for saxophone prowess, going to be right here playing the music. Stay tuned.